another edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Today is July 20th, 2016, and I'm your host, William Hill. And today we're going to be sitting down and talking with Jeff Kingswood. He is a minister in the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church, and we're going to be talking with him, as we did last year, about the ARP General Synod that was held this past summer. Mr. Kingswood is the president, not the president, he is the chairman of the Board of Trustees of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary, and we'll get to that discussion in just a minute. Let me quickly let everybody know what we're doing on the podcast. It's similar to what I say almost every single time, but we are still actively working on topics, guests, book reviews, and so forth for the program. And if you have suggestions or you have comments, you can write me at confessingourhope@gpts.edu. If you want to find out what we're doing in more detail than just this little blurb I'm giving right now, you can go to our website at confessingourhope.com. In addition to that, of course, as a podcast of the seminary, you can avail yourself of the seminary website. It's simply gpts.edu. And we do, of course, have the Summer Institute coming up and a host of other things going on in the summertime. We stay still pretty active, not as active, but active to put together some good classroom material. And so, again, you can find out more about that at our website, gpts.edu. So as I said, we're going to be talking with Jeff Kingswood. He is a minister in the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church, ARP for short, or better known as the ARP. And we're going to be talking about its General Synod and some of the issues that were dealt with this year and kind of get a flavor for what the ARP does as opposed maybe to what the OPC does or the PCA does each year. So, Jeff, it's good to have you back on the program. You did this last year, and so you're an expert now.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Bill. Thank you.
You bet. Jeff, tell us quickly, and I know we did this last year, but people have probably forgotten by now. How did the ARP get its start, and what is its basic fundamental roots, theologically and otherwise?
Theologically, it's a seceder denomination. It has its roots in both the Reformed Presbytery and the Associate Presbytery back in Scotland in the 18th century and the 1730s. And those denominations, which eventually became denominations, the Associate Presbytery and the Reformed Presbytery, began sending missionaries to North America. And those missionaries in North America came to the conclusion that a lot of the issues that had separated them back in Scotland were no longer relevant. And so they formed a denomination in North America. And it was a northern and southern denomination. Now, after time and some of the issues related to race relations and the issues that were hot antebellum, Synod of the Carolinas separated from the larger group. Now, that larger group eventually was absorbed into the PCUS. But the ARP in the South, as a synod of the larger body, it continued as an independent synod for some time, and it has continued to grow and spread both west and north. And now we have congregations as far north as Nova Scotia, Canada, and across the southern United States, Texas, Arizona. And, so it's growing. It's growing slowly. Statistically, actually, it's shrinking because some of our old congregations are closing their doors, but new congregations are springing up and being planted, and so there's growth at the periphery and even at the heart. But we are closing some of the older, smaller congregations. So statistically, it looks like we're in terms of number of congregations that we're shrinking a little bit. But there are a number of exciting church planting works going on. So,
fantastic. And those numbers don't, of course, show up as far as particularized churches, so it's a little deceptive then to say it's shrinking when indeed it probably isn't.
Yeah, exactly. There's some debate about how you can interpret those figures.
Sure. Now, you mentioned Canada. Tell the listeners where you're from and maybe a little of your background.
I'm from southern Ontario, just about an hour and a half west of Toronto towards Detroit. And in that little part of Canada that sticks down into the Great Lakes. I'm a minister of a ARP church here in Canada. It's about 16 years old. We joined in 2001. And like a lot of the ARP congregations in Canada, our roots are coming out of some of the other mainline churches here where people are growing disaffected because of the theological direction of those denominations. So Christian Reformed roots, Presbyterian Church in Canada roots, those would be the majority of our members, and or at least the origins of our congregations. Now the congregation's made up of a very diverse variety of backgrounds.
Sure. Now tell the listeners also, as aside from being a very busy pastor who's late for appointments, that was a joke, by the way. I was late for our appointment. Everybody must well know now that I've said that because I got behind on my schedule. But tell the listeners what else you do. What? I'm actually going somewhere with this.
Okay. I'm, as Bill has mentioned, I'm chairman of the board of the Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. I'm also a trustee of the Banner of Truth Trust, which I think most of your listeners will probably know publishes Reformed, historic, and contemporary Reformed literature, and hosts pastors' conferences both in the UK and in the United States and Australia. And what else do I do?
Your husband?
I'm a husband and father. I have 12 grandchildren and 6 children, all but one married, and I pastor a congregation.
Yep. Now, where I was going with it is you're a relatively new appointment to the board of Banner, I think, a couple years
now, yeah.
Yep. And the reason I wanted him to indicate that is many of you who listen to this podcast on a regular basis know that Dr. Pipa does the Faith and Practice every month, and you see me overusing Twitter and Facebook probably, and emphasis on overuse, promoting Banner of Truth as they work in team with us to get books into your hands by giving you a discount if you submit a question. And so there was a method to my madness here. So Jeff Kingswood is on the Board of Trustees. He's one of the guys that basically helps us do that work directly or indirectly. But he's the father-in-law of the general manager of the United States wing of the Banner of Truth. And he directly is involved with the seminary as far as helping us do that with Dr. Piper's Faith and Practice. So you kind of see it's a small world, really, when you really get down to it. So it just wanted to get that in. Now, the ARP Synod this year was held when and where?
It was held the first week of June in Bonclarken, North Carolina, which is just a suburb of Hendersonville, really, just near Asheville, at our conference grounds.
Yeah, and then you have it there every year,
That's
right?
And
I so much appreciate being a PCA guy, not to besmirch the PCA, that's not my goal here, but I so much appreciate that as opposed to how we do it, just bouncing around all over the place. It gets very expensive and chaotic. Do you find your delegates or your commissioners or whatever you call them there, is the expense for them to go to the ARP Synod very high?
Not really, because most of them come, are able to drive within a day's drive of the synod, and so their travel expenses are relatively small. Now, as the denomination's expanding, it is more expensive, and some of our congregations up here in Canada, it can cost, $1,500 to have somebody come down and stay, because each congregation bears the costs of its travel independently. So it can become very expensive for some of our outlying congregations.
Do the commissioners, delegates, do they stay on the campus there?
Some do. We've outgrown Bonclarken in terms of its carrying capacity. A lot of the older congregations have cottages on the grounds where their delegates will stay, and there are some beautiful hotel facilities that have been built there at Bonclarken in the last few years. If you're organizing a conference in the area, I urge you to check it out. But local hotels and businesses often cater to some degree to the synod, so that's helpful as well.
That's very good. Now, how long is the ARP synod? Is there a hard break, or is it just till it's done?
It's just till it's done, and only once that I know of has that caused problems where people just had to leave because of travel plans, and we ran out of a quorum. But generally speaking, we begin on Tuesday, morning or early afternoon, and people begin arriving in the morning registering. But the synod begins on Tuesday afternoon, and we hope to be done sometime on Thursday. Usually it's very compact and very efficiently run. The staff at our ARP Center in Greenville do a wonderful job of getting all the reports together and just the committees. It's very well organized.
Hmm. That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Well, being well organized, that's a good quality.
Mm-hmm.
If you get chaos, because how many in attendance generally?
350 to 400, depending on the year. It is a general assembly, even though we call it a synod. It is a general assembly, so every congregation is entitled to send a pastor and elder, and some of the larger congregations entitled to send more, depending on the size of their congregation.
So, yeah, you answered the next question. We talk about the ARP, and it's a synod, a general synod, and the PCA, the OPC, it's a general assembly. But it's functionally, it's the same concept?
It is. It is functionally. It retains the name synod from the time that it's separated from the larger ARP that existed before, you know, in the 1820s. And so it just retained the name of synod because it was a regional synod at that time. And it has just, because of historical reasons, retained the name. But it functions as a true general assembly with every congregation represented.
All right. What are the general distinctives of the ARP as it maybe as you think about it in relationship to the PCA or the OPC? I realize we have fraternal relations within ourselves, but does the ARP carry a certain distinctive that's, as it were, its own as opposed to the other two big guys on the block?
Yeah, I would say that it's history, it's maturity. It's gone through different phases over the 200 and I forget what synod this was, 213, I think. It's matured. It's gone through some stages. It flirted with liberalism in the 70s and 80s and deliberately rejected that path, turned its back on that, and turned in a more conservative direction again, and has taken increasingly sound positions on a number of issues. And over time, over that period from the 70s and 80s until now, I think we've seen an increasing growth of conservative, historic, reformed understanding in our synod, and attracting younger men who are of that mindset and of that conviction. So yep. That's been encouraging.
What were some of the issues that you guys were wrestling with? I mean, I obviously know the answer to that, but
yeah.
Probably nobody else does.
Yeah. A couple key ones. One was, it's been an issue that we've been dealing with for a long time, and that's the relationship of the college and the seminary to the synod. That was settled to some degree a few years back, but the seminary and college boards were amalgamated, and that has caused some real tension, both financial and administrative, in the seminary. And this synod actually supported a number of seminary professors had issued a protest statement, if you like, and this synod actually affirmed those professors in what they had said, and we directed that the entirety of the allocation, the denominational ministry fund that goes to Erskine, be directed to seminary purposes as opposed to generally being distributed to the college and the seminary. And I think what you see there is a recognition that the college has deliberately seemed to go its own way for some time and missed attempts at being directed by the synod. And so being fed up with that, I think the majority of the synod said, no, okay, we need the seminary. The seminary is important to us, and so we're going to fund the seminary. And so the funds were delegated in their entirety to the seminary. And then following that, there was a motion that the seminary be separated from the college, and that the board.
So they were connected. In what way were they connected?
They're connected geographically. They're on the same campus.
Okay.
In Due West.
And so so when you say they separated, you're talking about the separate government, as it were.
Exactly.
Aside from the denomination control, but a separate government entity of itself.
A separate board. Right now, the board of the college and the seminary are one. They weren't up until several years ago, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And at that point, they were amalgamated, it was said, for administrative and financial purposes. But it's only been to the detriment of the seminary. And so the denomination, seeing that, has said, no, it's time, we're going to separate them again. And possibly relocate. That's also part of the discussion. Due West, South Carolina is a pleasant little community, but it's not the place to locate a theological seminary in the 21st century. So there's talk of possibly relocating to Greenville and or Columbia, South Carolina, where there's a satellite campus right now. So there's discussion and study going on as to where the seminary might possibly relocate.
They can't go to Greenville. There's already a really great school in Greenville.
I told them that, but they have space in their new administrative offices, so there's a possibility of hosting it there. It would be at the other end of Greenville, away from Taylor's.
Well, you know, I always try to find an opportunity to accentuate or to highlight the seminary. It's a podcast.
Yeah,
And I'm a graduate of the school, and
right.
I love Greenville Seminary. And,
absolutely.
And just as and don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that. Obviously, he's the chairman of the board. I mean, he labors far and wide for the seminary. My only point is to say this: if you're gonna raise a family, if you're going to, you can't find really a better city to raise a family in. Greenville is a fantastic city. Whether you choose to go to Greenville Seminary, you choose to go to Erskine, it's a fantastic city to raise a family. There's plenty to do. You got the mountains not too far away. A few hours drive, you're in the ocean. I mean, it's just a great place. And this being said, great for Erskine. It's great for Greenville Seminary. It's attractive region of the country, and cost of living is very low compared to the rest of the nation. And so, just wanted to, you know, get that in there. You know, regardless of where you go, it's just a great city to be in.
That's right. And I think that's, you know, the faculty and the board who are discussing the possibility really see that and find the Greenville idea much more attractive in terms of quality of life for students and faculty.
Sure.
Over and against Columbia or other possibilities.
So this issue that it split separated the college, the governmental aspects of it from the seminary, how long was this in the making?
This came up. This was put to the floor. This was not on the agenda. This came out of the blue, so to speak. It was a motion from one of the delegates who just came to the microphone and made the motion. So how long it's been in the works? There's been rumbling for a few years that it wasn't working, that it was a retrograde step to begin with, and so we need to go back to a separate board. And and so someone just made the motion. The motion to support the seminary faculty and that was, everybody knew about that. That was public. But the motion to work toward a separation was new.
What's the timeline on that?
As soon as it's practicable. I think the wording of it was, let me find it. I've got it here.
I mean, we're Presbyterian, so when you say, I mean, that could mean, you know, we never do anything.
Yeah, clear, what right? is deemed in the best interests of both. That's
okay.
That's the qualifier. So, you know, I imagine it wouldn't happen in a year or so. It's probably a 2-3-4 year process.
And this action was well received by the synod.
It was, yeah, almost unanimous. There were a few voices, you know, less than a percentage, I would guess, raised in opposition, but the vast majority of the synod voted for it.
Sure. In your opinion, of course, and this is obviously just your opinion, how does this better position the seminary in the ARP as opposed to maybe what it's been doing currently or up till this point?
Yeah, up till this point, the seminary, because of its connection with the college, there's been a financial drain. The mm-hmm. college charges the seminary certain fees for services rendered because it's on the campus. And the seminary's been feeding funds into the the college, and the college is in financial difficulty, so it's been something of a cash cow. And so that's something that we're hoping to change. The other thing is that the seminary educates ARP ministers, but the vast majority of its students aren't ARP students. They're coming from a variety of backgrounds. And the question of relocation and what effect that will have on the demographic of the student body, that's something that needs to be closely examined. I'm not sure that that's been done yet, and how that might change things, and the enrollment issues associated with that, I'm not sure where that, I'm sure that'll be part of the discussion.
Sure. So practically, in your opinion, practically and theologically, this is really a bonus, a win for the seminary.
I think it will be. I think we'll see a continuing in a direction that we'd like to see. There are some good men who labor there. We wouldn't agree with all of their positions as Greenville men, certainly with regard to, you know, Genesis and those perennial issues. But there are some men there who definitely are godly, gracious men, and I'm hoping that they can keep working to move the seminary in a more and more orthodox direction.
Yeah, that's great. It's great to hear. It's always encouraging when, I mean, that's somewhat of a monumental decision, at least as I understand it. And it's good to hear that it was so widely accepted. That's, you know, Kenny, it's just encouraging.
Yeah, it really is.
When it comes that way. And so that was one of the bigger issues that you dealt with. And there was another subject, well, actually two, kind of coming under the head of theological and social concerns. What were those? And
yeah,
let's summarize them.
Our theological
I'm
social
sure I'll
concern.
Have,
yeah.
I'm sure I have follow-up questions as you talk.
Right.
But
the committee was tasked with a couple of things at the 2015 meeting. One of them was to examine, well, actually the second one was an earlier meeting, but at the 2015 meeting, the committee was tasked with coming up with a position paper on women in looking at the enrollment of women in selective service, the possibility of that happening. The committee was charged and looked at position papers from our sister denominations, the RPCNA, the OPC, and looked at their position papers. It came up with essentially the same position that those denominations have, and that there's no biblical basis for requiring women to serve in the military. And that, in fact, it's counter. Certainly in combat roles, it's counter to Scripture. And so our position was that we stand that women ought not to be conscripted into military service or required to participate in military combat. So that's officially a position now. And the fact that it's officially a position, of course, would be helpful to those who, if women were to be drafted or registered under selective service, that they could point to a position of the denomination, say, on conscientious grounds, no, I'm declining to participate.
Yeah, I was going to ask, it's one thing for the denomination to make these statements, but practically, as it works itself out in the church, you know, you're a pastor, I'm a pastor, and if I have a young lady in my congregation who is drafted or attempts to be drafted into the military, I mean, how does that practically help me? You kind of answered that, but
yeah.
But I think it's a pretty big issue, and it's often discussed, and if you're on the social media networks, you see this discussion from time to time, at least, and
right.
It's one we probably need to think through a little bit more, or at least know where we're going to what we're going to do if it happens. And did that position paper give any kind of guidance to pastors, elders in the church as to what their response ought to be if in case that does happen?
Yeah, they gave some hints from our Commission on Chaplains and Military Personnel, sections of their handbook which dealt with these issues, and a number of helpful internet links that from the OPC and the PCA, talking about how you can then, because your church has a position on this, you have the opportunity for, even though we're not pacifists, that we can say, no, our position on women is that we are conscientious objectors, and that that is our documented position. And so pastors could go with young women or speak on their behalf or write a letter on their behalf pointing to these documents and saying, no, this is the position of our denomination. This is not just somebody trying to dodge, pardon the pun, trying to dodge the draft, but this is really a thought-out theological position.
No, that's great. I mean, it's very helpful. Is that available online on the ARP site yet, or will it be?
It will be. It is not yet. Okay. It will be part of the minutes of Synod, but as far as I know, last time I checked about a week ago, it wasn't up there yet. But it will be.
Okay, very good. Well, that was the easy one. Oh, that was a joke, by the way.
Yeah.
Neither one of these are simple subjects.
But you're right.
And but it does stress the importance of the fact that in our world and our worldviews drive these things as Christians. It's important as men to come together to discuss and debate these issues and to come up with some positions. What does the Bible teach on these things? And this is one of the things that general synods do, or general assemblies do, or presbyteries do, sessions do. We're Presbyterian, after all, and it's important to address these issues from a biblical worldview so we can help our congregations, because some of these things are very, very simply practical issues. Women in combat, there's not a congregation on the planet. No, maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but there's not a congregation in the United States, I would suggest, to say that this may not come to every congregation's door at some point. And being have helpful wisdom and guidance from elders in the church on these issues is very, very critical. But, of course, as I said, it was a little bit of maybe the easier of the two.
The other issue was a report on race relations in the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church. That was about a 40-page paper that looked at the history of these questions in the ARPC, and because the Synod of the Carolinas, the originating Synod of the ARP, was in the Carolinas, and a large number of its membership were slave owners at one time. This obviously is an issue that strikes at the heart of who we are in the ARP. And so there's a very good section in this paper on the history, the development of this question, and related to the development of the denomination, why it seceded from the larger ARP because of the whole issue of manumission and the fact that it became a theological imperative in the Northern Church. So there's a historical discussion, then there's some exegetical considerations, there's a good 10 pages of exegetical considerations, theological reflections, and then a very helpful another 10 pages or so of pastoral application, just talking about how this makes a difference today in our churches, because many of our churches still are Southern churches. And as we've seen in the United States in the last couple of months, the whole race relations issue is heating up rather than cooling down, it seems. And so questions that might come up as pastors related to our denominational history. How do we deal with those and how do we answer those? And the paper does a fantastic job of addressing those. And it was adopted not unanimously, but certainly overwhelmingly. There were still some who didn't want to adopt the paper. And I don't think for racist reasons. They were thinking more of practical reasons of saying we're just jumping on the bandwagon because this has been a popular, like you said, in our pre-discussion in the PCA and places. But this discussion started earlier in our denomination than it did in the PCA. And, of course, our history is longer than the PCA's. So
that's it. 2-0.
Yeah,
we're already losing.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
No, but
it's a little friendly interdenominational banter.
Yeah, but you know, for both reasons, it's an important question, and I think the conclusions of the paper are excellent, just well constructed theologically, well thought out. It's not just a knee jerk apology. It's a thought-out theological position on this subject, which repents of theological error of the past as a denomination, but also articulates, I think, historically why some things happened the way they did, and doesn't make apology for history, but perhaps for some of the bad decisions that were made as a reaction to some of that history. So it's well done.
Yeah. I don't know how familiar you are with Overture 43 of the most recent PCA General Summit.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
How is what the ARP did differ, and how is it similar?
I think it's much more nuanced. I want to be really careful here.
I realize I asked a dangerous
question. Yeah, you did. If you took the PCA question and really broadened it and expanded it historically and theologically, I think you might come to a similar conclusion. I just think that I'm going to brag on our Theological and Social Concerns Committee and the chairman, Ben Glazer from Mississippi, just a very competent theologian, and the men on the committee with him, competent theologians. So it's a paper that doesn't shy away from the hard questions, but it doesn't give knee-jerk responses. It's not just a, we need to do this because the world is looking. It is a, we need to do this because this is biblically right and true. And there have been places of error in our theological practice, and we need to address those theologically and not just socially. And I think that is the strength of the ARP response over and against just the impression I've had of some of the discussion in the PCA.
Yeah, well said, and I didn't mean to – I wasn't trying to set you up or anything. I was just No, given the climate, I think you know you've touched on that a couple times as far as it relates to there's this tendency to kind of get wagged around by the world, and so the climate of the world is jump on this whole race issue, and so we need to too. Sounds to me like you try to avoid that and realize look at this from a strictly theological question as it relates to your history and going forward. And that, I mean, that's the substance of the question, really, anyway. But, it, I mean, it is an important subject and one we still need to keep thinking through. But, again, I emphasize the benefit of having these kinds of deliberative bodies that labor in some of these more difficult questions, and then being able to give guidance to the churches for guys like me who are just simpletons and who just need help with understanding some of these matters. And that's the one of the beauties of being Presbyterian. Jeff, as we kind of wrap up here, give me the average day in the ARP General Synod.
That's one of the things that I love about the ARP Synod is we meet for a very short time, really only three to 4 days. Sometimes we go into Friday morning. But every sederunt, every session begins with a worship service, a full worship service. We have not singing many hymns, but we sing a hymn or a psalm. We have a sermon, an exposition, usually on the theme of that year's synod, but not necessarily. That depends on the moderator and his instruction to those who are leading worship. But worship takes up, 40 minutes to an hour sometimes of each, morning, noon, and night. Every session begins with that worship. And I must say that this year, the exposition was by men who would not be A-listers, so to speak, just average men. They're not average by any means, but they're serving regular ARP congregations. They're not on the conference circuit. They're just the men who are bringing the word week by week to their congregations. And they preached, a number of them. And I thought the preaching at this year's synod was exceptional. It was the best I've ever heard at any synod or assembly. It was stellar. And we often break for prayer. The moderator has the prerogative of calling the assembly to prayer at any point. And whenever it seems to get sticky, the moderator just calls for a time of prayer. And we've gathered in small groups, or we pray individually, or someone leads us in prayer. It varies. And it seems, we're taking all that time in prayer. Some people got a little anxious about it at points. But for that time spent in worship and prayer, I really believe the Lord honors that, and we get through the business expeditiously.
Well, that's great. I'm very encouraged by that, frankly. I mean, well, I can say this now. I'm a minister in the PCA. I wish our General Assembly did that more often. Mm. I'll be perfectly honest, because as you well know, when you put a bunch of men in a room and you get dealing with some of the topics that we've even talked about with your General Synod, but even in our own denominations, sometimes tensions get high and emotions start going who knows sideways. And you know, we are frail men and we're prone to sin. And man, it would be just great to take a pause. And we need to pray about this. We need to think about what we're doing and pray about this and ask for the Lord's guidance and wisdom. It's His church.
Yeah.
And I just wish we did that more, not less. I mean, sometimes I feel like in some cases we're just so eager to get done and get through the business that we sort of forget that part of the equation.
Yeah.
And I'm just speaking for Bill. I suspect I'm not alone in that feeling, because it happens, and it's really encouraging to hear that goes on. It really does encourage me anyway mm-hmm. to hear that. Speaking of moderator, who was your moderator this year?
Our moderator this year was Mr. Phil Williams. He's a ruling elder from North Carolina, and he had some heart issues. He had a stent put in, actually, 1 week before the synod. And so our vice moderator, Patrick Malfrus, actually chaired most of the meeting with Mr. Williams watching. But so Phil Williams, and he set a wonderful tone for the synod. And then we elect our moderators for the next year. The incoming moderator for next year will be Mr. Lee Shelnut, or Reverend Lee Shelnut, who is a pastor again from the Carolinas, and a stellar background pedigree. He's a gifted, able theologian, very mission-minded. And
sure.
I does a lot of mentoring with young pastors overseas. Very interesting.
And he's from the Carolinas.
Yeah, I mean, Huntersville.
How can you go wrong?
That's right. Sounds like a perfect combo, right, Bill?
I can't escape the Carolinas. I'm going from South Carolina to North Carolina.
That's right.
Well, I mean that in the right way.
Yeah.
Escape. You actually raised something very interesting to me that I'd never even considered. So you vote for your next year's moderator in this year's meeting.
At the end of the meeting, we vote for next year's moderator. Yeah.
Is there like a polity reason for that, or is it just the way you've always done it? Or
it allows for a year of transition and continuity, then, so that the incoming moderator is an apprentice to the serving moderator, and can ask questions and just be briefed on the various things that are going on. And it gives us, I think it's, when I first came into it, I thought it was a little strange, but as I've looked at it functioning, it does give a real degree of continuity that isn't always there in other systems.
I think that's a great idea. Of course, you guys have been doing it a lot longer, so you should have all these things mastered by now.
Yeah, a lot of those things they do. The ARP, I'm a relative newcomer to the ARP, only about 16 years, and I came out of the Presbyterian Church in Canada, where I was educated, which was a very polity savvy group, and the ARP is equally, except they don't have as many Latin phrases in their operations. But.
Yeah. No. Yep. Well. You're certainly not as old as the ARP. You don't want to admit. Wouldn't want to admit to that anyway. But in your opinion, Jeff, what's the state of the ARP? Right. You know, if you just summarize the state of the ARP, it's good. It's healthy. It's that kind of thing.
It's good. It's encouraging. I've seen a continual growth. Continual move in a more orthodox direction. There are issues. There are a lot of
which will be.
Yeah, but there's a lot of small congregations in the South that are just shutting down because they're rural. Nobody's moving into the area, but they haven't done evangelism. They haven't reached out, and in some cases, there isn't much population to reach out to. But that's an excuse, I think. We need to be more aggressive, not just for numbers, but for the kingdom. I think we've been a little bit content to be who we are and look at ourselves in the mirror and go, well, we're not doing too bad. We
kind of the fat and happy syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. And historical and all those things. And I love the South. I mean, I go back and forth to the South a lot. Being a Canadian, I've developed a lot of affinity for things Southern, but there can be a Southern politeness sometimes that gets in the way of doing things, and that can be a little frustrating at
points. Yeah, there's targets all over the place, and I'm not going to aim at any of them.
Yeah.
I'm not from the South either, as everybody knows. Yeah. I mean, this is not a secret. I've been doing this podcast for 5 years. This is like the 117th program I've done. I've learned more than I could have ever said, and I've been very thankful for it. But everybody knows I'm from New York, and yeah. No, you're right. I mean, there is that sense. But, you know, I was just thinking, Jeff, as you were talking about that, small churches and shutting down. And you know, I pastor a small church now, and I'm so thankful for this congregation. It almost makes me want to cry.
Mm.
And but one of the things that I feel pressed by is what Christ said at the end of his time on earth when he told his disciples, go.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, you may be a small congregation. We are. But trying to instill in the people the idea that Christ told us to go. He told us to go. And we can't go to Africa, but you can go to Marion. You can go to that town where you're living. You can talk to people at the gas station, who you work with. You can communicate these things. And oftentimes that's the key, because, frankly, most people just aren't going to wander off the street. If they're invited to come to church, that you have a better chance that they're going to come.
Absolutely.
They may not come, but there's a better chance that they're going to.
Yeah.
Because it's a scary thing to walk into a church that you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And so it's this whole idea of going and reaching out into the community. I just had lunch with another PCA minister and asked him, of course, the same question every minister asks every other minister whenever they get together. So how big is your church? How many members do you have? I almost get tired of that question.
Yeah.
And they have 114 on the rolls. I have 20.
Mm. Yeah.
I could discourage me, or I can just say, you know, need to go.
That's right.
Need to communicate the kingdom of Christ, his kingdom. It's the gospel. It is the gospel. It is only the gospel that's going to solve and change lives.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And do it that way. And it's no different for the ARP or anywhere else. And I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure, by saying all of that.
Absolutely.
Next year, you're meeting, obviously, at Bon Clarkin.
We are.
Unless you're making a big change.
Well, let me put a plug in here. We've been invited by the RPCNA to a concurrent synod with them up north somewhere. The destination hasn't been hammered out yet. But they came down last year and met with us at Bon Clarkin. And so they have, in turn, extended the invitation for 2019. So there may be a new historical synod in the near future in 2019, where the ARP will meet somewhere else. That would be earth-shaking, but it would be a wonderful thing. I'm really encouraged and thankful to our RP brothers for that invitation.
Yeah, and we've got at least one student at Greenville Seminary who's under care and licensed by the RPCNA. and just a curiosity question, is the ARP exclusive psalmody?
No, it wasn't until 1946, and in 1946 a study committee came and recommended the use of, you know, theologically sound hymns. And, yeah, that was earth-shaking. It is now the common practice in the ARP. We do have some exclusive psalm-singing congregations, but they are definitely in the minority.
Yep. The only reason I ask that question is because I think listeners here, RPCNA, they're going to make that connection. Are you guys that? No? Okay.
Yeah.
So just goes to show you that differing opinions on those things, you can still work together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It's been great.
It's encouraging to hear. Jeff, any final words, plugs for the seminary?
Well, I'll go back to something you said earlier in the interview that I forget what exactly you said, but something to the effect that you're a bit slow. And I've got to say, though, that you graduated from Greenville. You can't be completely slow.
I don't know. I think I'm slowing down every year.
But just as I'm encouraged with ARP, I am so encouraged with what's going on at the seminary. I'm encouraged by some of the faculty hires. I'm encouraged by some of the thinking that's going on in reference to administrative issues. I think that in God's providence, the best years of Greenville Seminary are yet coming. And I pray that we would be found faithful to that stewardship, using the gifts God's given us, and that many more men would be encouraged to come and train with us and just be refreshed as they sit under the teaching of great and godly men. So I'm really excited about where Greenville's going.
Yeah, it's well said. And Dr. Pipo, as I was getting ready to graduate, when the faculty and then I guess ultimately the board agreed on some of the academic changes that were made, which I'm thrilled with, frankly. But he jokingly told me, he goes, "You might want to just stick around for a few more years because of these changes they're making." And of course, I responded, "No, thank you. I'm done. I've had enough." I mean, that's the truth. Yeah. Everybody knows this. I just was eager to get out there and start doing what I've been taught. But the thing is that some of the academic changes are really, really great. With the bringing on Dr. Ryan McGraw, who the listeners of this podcast know very well, he's been on many times. Mm-hmm. Dr. Michael Morales, I didn't know what biblical theology was, frankly, until I sat in his classes, and it's completely changed the way I even work on sermons.
Yeah.
It's just given me a whole set of lenses that I didn't have before and tools I didn't even know existed, and now they're in my toolbox.
Yeah.
And so it is really an exciting time, and there are big things yet coming down the road. So, and something that, Jeff, you mentioned that I fail to say, I don't say enough, but those that listen to this podcast, pray for the seminary. You know, we're like everything else. We depend on the Lord. The school depends on God's goodness and providence and compassion and grace, and pray that the Lord will continue to shine his face upon the school, and that this faculty and the staff would remain faithful to the word of God and our confessions that we uphold.
Amen.
Pray for that. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to keep it going. It's not our efforts. It's not our might. It's the Lord and him alone. So
absolutely,
it's a great reminder from the chairman of the Board of Trustees. Any final concluding words? Jeff, any pot shots about me being a United States guy and you're a Canadian or?
No, I'm half my kids live in the States. I've reconciled myself to that.
I was going to say, yeah, you probably don't have anything else to say about that. But, no, you know, it's always great having you on. You're engaging. It's enjoyable to talk with you about these things. And it's exciting to see what the Lord's doing in one of our sister denominations, all for the good of the glory of his name and the gospel.
Amen. It's been good to be with you, Bill. Thank you.
You bet, Jeff. Hold on just a minute while I wrap things up. Let me just tell everybody really fast. I'm not going to belabor this as I usually do, but coming up on the program, we're going to be talking with Daniel Jarcifer. He is also a board member of Greenville Seminary, and he's going to be on to talk about the 2016 General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in America. Now, that discussion will probably have a little bit different flavor. I'll just warn you up front. I was also a teaching elder in the PCA. I was there, and so both Daniel Jarcifer and I were there present. And so it'll be probably a little different flavor in discussion because I'll probably have more to say than I normally do, which ought to scare everybody. Look forward to that coming up next week. The week after, Dr. Ben Shaw and Dr. Sid Dyer, both professors at the seminary, will be on to talk about the importance, the value, the necessity of the biblical languages. I've already recorded it. It's a fantastic discussion, and I look forward to getting it out there very, very soon. The week after that, Dr. Ryan McGraw will be on to talk about, is the Trinity practical? Again, I've already recorded that program as well. It was very encouraging and very edifying. It almost made me cry at the end. It was so good. So look forward to those programs coming up on the podcast. And again, if you have any questions about the seminary, you can write the seminary at info@gpts.edu. Somebody will get back to you very, very quickly. If you have questions for me, you can write me at confessingourhope@gpts.edu. So until next week, when we talk with Daniel Jarcifer, he's the pastor of Christ Our Hope Presbyterian Church. That's a PCA congregation. We do thank you for listening to this particular edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. And God bless.